Welcome to Nightlife, the first hour.
Well, city populations are growing across Australia, and it's impacting numerous sectors, particularly housing sectors. Is the determination to push construction projects to meet demand a disaster in the making? Experts are warning that cutting corners to lower costs and meet targets are creating substandard homes and apartments. More and more people are buying properties that are faulty or even worse, dangerous. There are reports of new properties that are riddled with structural failures, concrete cancer, and a growing issue known as leaky building syndrome. Wonder whether you've been the victim of shoddy construction. Did you buy a new property or off the plan only to find your new home riddled with defects? And how did you go about fixing them anyway? To find out what's going on, I'm joined by Phil Dwyer, President of the Builders Collective of Australia. Phil, good evening.
Good evening, Philip.
And Sahil Basin, the National General Manager of Roscon, which is a company that specialises in identifying building defects. Sahil, good evening to you.
Good evening there.
Yes. All right. Well, both of you, welcome to Nightlife. Is it a case, Phil, of builders putting profits above safety?
There's no doubt about that. The developers are paying far too much for land and looking to shortcut other areas during the construction, particularly in the areas of fire safety and those type of things.
Mm-hmm.
So we're ending up with substandard buildings, and we believe that it's all virtually at crisis point for both builders and consumers. It's not just the construction, it's the management of the industry that's causing a lot of issues as well.
Mm. Well, we'll get to that in a moment. So, Hill, what are you seeing in homes? And can you give us an example of a situation you might see when someone asks you to investigate a defect?
Yeah, sure. So we work in mainly the residential and also owners corporation sector, which is multi-storey apartment buildings.
Yep.
And whenever we're invited to complete a defect report, it's mainly things that we're seeing of lightweight construction causing failures, which was designed as an alternative for second stories, which is now being used throughout the construction process. We're seeing things like
just explain what that is, because we're not all familiar with building terms and properties. What's lightweight construction?
Sure, no problem. So historically, when lightweight construction was invented, what it is essentially cement sheet, or which is a waterproof based plasterboard, or a lightweight foam, which is rendered to come up with an appropriate application, which was only used historically for second story homes. Now what we're seeing is that lightweight construction is being used for ground level as well as first level to reduce, once again, developers' costs again to increase their profitability. However, lightweight construction was never meant for ground stories. So we're seeing complete houses made out of foam, which are then rendered on top. And consumers are thinking that they're buying a solid brick home when they're looking at the product.
Really? Well, so this is what are these are foam sheets that are rendered with concrete or cement render on the outside.
Correct. So the they're essentially a polystyrene, a 75 mil or a 90. They come in different thicknesses.
Mm-hmm.
In terms of a product, and then they are top coated with a render application. Correct.
Yeah. But, I mean, Phil, from a builder's point of view, I mean, presumably builders learn to build things properly. Tell me about the sorts of pressure they're coming under to cut corners.
Enormous pressure. Good builders are finding that they're not competitive in this market because they're not prepared to cut corners. So we have those sort of issues as well. And all of this impacts on housing affordability and also demand. Because as Sahil just mentioned, you know, lightweight construction is a major problem because we're seeing a lot of leaky buildings created through the lightweight construction, and the render that's put on the foam that Sahil was talking about is a product that is a textured type of finish and it's rendered on. So it's an acrylic finish and it's not always waterproof.
Okay, so in other words, what's keeping you safe from the elements is just a thin layer of render. I mean, some people might, lying in their beds, think, well, I'm glad that I've got a concrete wall or a solid brick wall or something of that nature, or a cavity wall that's separating me from the elements. You're saying in many cases people think they've got a solid masonry wall and it's not.
Correct. And that's fairly general, and we're having an enormous amount of problems, which Sir Hill, I'm sure, will confirm, with leakage from balconies and that type of thing in high-rise apartments,
right,
and causing a lot of mould problems and water entering into the living areas.
Yeah. What is we've talked about leaky building syndrome a bit, Sir Hill. Talk about that for me. What does it mean? In some areas of Australia, I understand it's almost epidemic.
Yeah, sure. There's a number of factors that cause the leaky building syndrome. One, we've already mentioned, in lightweight construction. Two, there's windows and glass which is coming in from overseas,
yeah,
which isn't to Australian standards, and what that causes is ingress of water through the seals of the actual windows and balustrades themselves.
Mm-hmm.
Then we've got leaky buildings that Phil just mentioned into lounge rooms below, and how that's occurring is that most developers are required to have private open space for dwellings, and the way they're doing that is by having balcony areas. And the balcony areas that we're constructing in Australia are very substandard, to the point where we're now working with professors at Melbourne University, which we've teamed up with last month to develop a new methodology for constructing balconies, because everything that we're doing in Australia at the moment is failing.
Right. So essentially, describe how that. What's wrong with it, Sir Hill? What's wrong with the way we're building balconies at the moment?
Sure. So if you break it down, what we've currently got at the moment is a timber frame. On top of a timber frame, a cement sheet is normally laid. And on top of the cement sheet, your consumers would generally hear the term waterproof membrane applied.
Yeah.
Now, the problem with the waterproof membrane applied on top of the cement sheet is it's only around a millimetre thick. It's a fancy word for paint that's a little bit thicker and has got some special properties. But essentially, it is 1 or 2 millimetres thick.
Really?
That's got to be properly
flashed back into the building, I presume.
Well, there's parts that go on top of the waterproof membrane. So on top of the waterproof membrane, there's tiling, then grouting, and a part of that would be the flashing that goes into the building. But what's happening is that water gets in through the cement mortar, which cracks over time, 1 or 2 years, and the waterproof membrane has failed, because it only takes a slight crack in the waterproof membrane through thermal mass changes. So in Australia, in some buildings, we've got a case where externally the buildings are 40 degrees. Internally, people are keeping it climate controlled at 22 degrees. The temperature of the thermal mass difference is results in cracking and movement.
Yeah.
And that cracking and movement lets water ingress through the balconies straight into the areas below, which is normally a ceiling cavity followed by a lounge room or a bedroom.
Yeah. Look, I'm sure, myself listening tonight, I'm sure others too listening tonight think, well, hang on, aren't there such things as building standards? There are Australian standards of construction. Surely there are Australian standards in all sorts of things, in, you know, what sort of motor cars you can put on the road, what sort of appliances you can sell, and so on. I mean, there must be standards for building construction. How on earth do these things meet them?
Yeah, sure. So the standards that I'd like to point out, one of the major failures that we see with balconies and leaky building syndrome is in multi-storey construction.
Mm.
Now, in 2000 and I think it was around 2003, where the government introduced domestic home building warranty insurance. However, due to the lobbying of a lot of bigger builders, any building that was over 3 stories was exempt from that. Now I'll pass it over to Phil, because Phil has got some great details into that, I believe. We're mainly the experts in terms of the technicality. But Phil, do you want to continue, elaborate a bit on that one?
Yes, certainly. It was July 2002, the introduction of builder's warranty insurance. That was
Just explain what that is.
Well, they call it insurance, builder's warranty insurance.
So if I'm a home or apartment buyer,
yes,
I've got. I'm told about this, and I think, oh, that's good because I've got insurance.
Yes, but yes, this consumer protection comes with the management of the industry as well. But in terms of high rise and multi level, anything above three levels is excluded from this so-called protection. And it's very limited protection because it's last resort. So it's only available under three circumstances, which is the death of the builder, the disappearance of the builder, or the insolvency of the builder. So that's the only triggers, and they've added one or two others if there's a court case or something and the builder's found guilty of something, it can be available. But basically, it's only those three triggers that you can have a claim.
And well, but hang on. Are you really saying to me, Phil, that if any building is higher than a three-story walk-up, that I don't have any insurance building defects?
You have no consumer protection other than litigation.
Is that right?
That is your only course. So if you have a builder that decides, no, I'm not going to do anything about your problem, well, you can't do. There's nothing you can do about it other than be directed under the scheme directly to a tribunal.
I think people would be appalled by this. What happened to the? I mean, there's a community belief, isn't there, that builders are required to warrant their workmanship for a period? I think of it at 7 years, isn't it?
Six years it is now. It's 2 years for 2 years for defects, and 6 years for structural defects. So, and the 2 years for defects are only minor defects and so on. Mm-hmm. So once that 2 years goes, you're only covered for structural defects.
But who's that warranty against? The builder?
It's against the builder.
Even in apartment blocks?
No. In apartment blocks, you've got to take civil action against the builder.
Really?
So there's no government protection or no industry protection at all. Other than under the Building Act, so you have to activate that. You have to take civil action,
Which all of which costs a fortune, I presume, Phil.
More than a fortune. That's what's happened with this so-called builder's warranty insurance that was introduced that manages our industry, if you like, or the regime manages what will happen if something goes wrong.
Mm. Phil, what are we talking about here across Australia? Are we talking about the situation being common across the country, or is it presumably it varies in from jurisdiction to jurisdiction? Does it?
The same regime manages the industry across the nation.
Really?
So we've got this all originated with New South Wales and Victoria combining together with the Housing Industry Association and at that time Royal Sun and Alliance Insurance, which is now Vero. They can HIA and Vero concocted this scheme that we've got today, and HIA have made a fortune out of it. They've gone from a $38 million a year business to over $100 million on the back of this scheme, because the only place for the first four or five years of this scheme, you could only buy this insurance through HIA. So every builder in the nation had to buy it through HIA, through a broker, or every single policy went through HIA, so they made a fortune out of it. Mm. So they're very mute on the subject of consumer protection and never say a word about it, neither do master builders.
From what you're saying, though, there is basically no consumer protection for people in apartments at all. And for people in houses, there's a two-year defect period and then a four-year major construction period.
Yes, but only if the builder is dead, disappeared, or insolvent.
Yeah. So if they're not, you have to take action.
Civil action.
You have to take
civil action through the tribunals, and that's costing approximately $100,000 for each party if it goes through the tribunal.
So if a builder contests or won't fix it, you have to take that builder to a tribunal.
Correct.
And that's going to cost you about $100,000.
Each side. the builder. It'll cost the builder the same amount as what it does the consumer. But in a lot of cases, I had a phone call at 5 o'clock this afternoon from a Sydney builder, well-known builder, and he's in a lot of trouble with a development that he did a number of years ago. 2 days before the expiry date, he gets this demand, and so far he has spent $51,000 and $28,000 the owners' corporation has spent so far, and they haven't even spoken to one another yet. And but the problem that they're fighting over is $6,000 worth of defects.
Something of a joke,
what
isn't it?
It's insane.
Come in, Sir Hill.
Yeah, no, I just might just add to that by saying that multi-storey high-rises, although they haven't got building warranty insurance above 3 storeys, what we generally find is the developer has a contract with the builder, which in turn stipulates in there that there's a 12-month building warranty process. So that's when we are normally engaged in that 12-month period, where there is a building warranty for 12 months. But you can appreciate that structural warranties will take numerous years to show.
Yeah. I mean, if something's built badly and it ends up with concrete cancer, it's not going to show up in the first year or so.
Correct. Yeah, no, that's correct. And also with the owner's corporation that Phil mentioned then, one of the major problems that we've got in Victoria is the amount of, they call it resolution under the Owner's Corporation Act, to allow an owner's corporation to take the builder to court. Currently, that's sitting at 75% required. Now, we attend, myself and our staff attend these meetings on a weekly basis, and I can tell you when there's a, we normally attend buildings which are between 400 and 800 lots, so that's 400 to 800 apartments, and you would be lucky to have 100 people there. And that makes it impossible for the owner's corporation to commence legal proceedings against the builder because they don't have the 75% resolution of the entire owner's corporation.
And Phil, you're saying this, and this situation pertains pretty much across Australia.
Correct.
Yeah.
Right across Australia, even in the Northern Territory.
Okay. All right, let's get to some calls. Gary's a builder. He's on the line. Evening, Gary.
Evening, Phil. How are you?
I'm very well, thank you.
It's good. Yeah, Phil, I don't know whether I'm barking up the wrong tree here. These other two jokers are talking about high-rise and commercial stuff. I know that I haven't had to pay warranty insurance premiums when I've done commercial stuff, but I'm basically just a small-time builder who does the occasional house and renovations and things.
Right.
But I've done fix-ups on jobs that the BSA or the QBCC haven't bothered doing anything with. Because they just couldn't have been bothered. But,
What sort of dodgy work are you fixing up, Gary?
Bathrooms. They tend to leak. You're talking about leaky balconies. I've had one of them as well, and it was actually my own work that leaked. And what happened there was I did the veranda, and the tiler did the seamless membrane. Now, I don't know whether they did that right or not, because I wasn't there.
Yeah.
And when they tiled under the sliding door from the veranda into the upstairs lounge room, they didn't put the tiles all the way under, and they left a cavity there that was about 12 mil thick, and it would have gone and filled up and went over the top of the seamless membrane and probably leaked down through a join in the metal flashing that I did put there. And that was an easy fix. It was just a case of taking out part of the door and just filling it up with Sikaflex, and that solved that problem. But I've come across dodgy work from reputable builders whose seamless membranes have just failed, substandard framework, no damp course, and just the building industry really gets up my nose, because the people in charge who make the rules are incompetent.
Mm. Yeah, okay, all right. But thank you, Gary. Steve, you've heard a lot about electrical wiring as well.
Yes. And g'day, panel, and g'day, listeners. I've heard a lot about substandard electrical wiring. It's below the Australian safety standard, going into new high-rises and office blocks. Question one, how big a problem is it, and how can consumers and users of the facilities protect themselves?
Hmm. Sahil, do you want to have a go at this?
Yeah, sure. We've worked with two buildings currently that have got this that have got the problem, and that's got to do with the cabling coming from overseas again. And essentially, there's no quick and easy fix to it. It is essentially a complete strip out of the electrical cabling in that multi-storey building and putting in compliant cabling. So yeah. This cabling is overheating and then causes fires. There is numerous publications, even on the Master Builders website, NECA website, which is the electrician's website, which all indicate that the wiring essentially has to be stripped out and recompleted. There's not much of a fix to that one at all, unfortunately.
That cabling came from China, and the ACCC were involved, and some 80,000 homes have that cabling in it. And basically the plastic sheathing on the cable fails, becomes brittle and falls off.
Yeah, okay. All right. Steve, thanks for raising the matter. Just back to you, Phil, and also Sahil too. I mean, this work is certified at some point, isn't it? Is this the part of the problem, that the work is being signed off when it's faulty? Once upon a time, certifying was done by independent government certifiers. It's not anymore. It's done by private contracting companies, isn't it?
Yes.
Private building surveyors.
Yes, private building surveyors.
Who sometimes work with developers, don't they?
They do sometimes. Or the builder, yes.
Or the builder in most cases. So how?
I mean, see, I'm an old bush lawyer, Phil and Sahil. To me, that just sounds like just a completely obvious conflict of interest.
It is.
And Sorry,
Phil. Go on, Phil. To you first, Phil. Go on.
Yeah. No, most certainly it is. There's been a major problem with private building surveyors working with developers and/or builders. Because whichever way we like to look at it, the pressure comes from the developer to the builder, then the builder to the surveyor, or wherever else there's going to be a shortcut made. And this takes place quite often. But it's like the, just talking about compliant product and so on, it's like the La Crosse building in Melbourne when it caught fire there 3 years ago. Now, that's still not resolved or anywhere near it today. There's 500 consumers that have been hit with rectification orders from the Melbourne City Council to rectify the building and so on, and the builder and developer and everyone else is sort of hanging back. But those panels that came into the country... They came in legitimately, apparently, but there's no way of making them compliant in this country. Governments have been sitting on their hands in regard to this.
Seems to be a massive failure of compliance or certification in some cases.
Of course, it is.
People trust that if a builder's a licensed builder, that they're going to build to certain standards. You're saying that that doesn't necessarily have to happen at all.
No, it doesn't have to happen. And, you know, there's a lot of builders in the last few years since the government have abrogated their responsibilities to insurers back in 2002. We've had this breakdown in compliance and every other aspect of building. And we've got a situation now that's approaching crisis point across the nation because these problems are massive everywhere.
Yeah.
It's just not confined to any one jurisdiction. It's right across the nation, and it's because of greed and, well, basically greed, and governments not understanding the industry and the way it should operate.
Can I just ask a question here to both of you? A certification, presumably, certifying surveyors or whatever they're called, these are the people who certify that the building's been built properly, that's a competitive industry, are they? They've got their shingle out there and they're looking for work.
They are, and it's a very competitive.
So, in other words, if developers find a, you know, I'm not pointing the finger at anybody in particular, but if developers obviously find a compliant certifier, then they'll get more work. I mean, the whole thing is just a complete conflict of interest, isn't it?
It is absolutely a conflict of interest. And yet we've got governments sitting on their hands. Just think about it, Philip. The building construction industry is virtually, the second biggest industry money income for the country, and yet we don't even have a housing minister in any jurisdiction. I mean, why is that? In Victoria, we've got four different ministers that are supposedly looking after the building industry. The left hand doesn't know what the right hand's doing. And it's no different in Sydney. We don't have a housing minister in Sydney. These are the two biggest states, but we do have a housing minister in Queensland where we do have the best domestic insurance available because it's first resort.
Okay. Yes, in fact, that point's been made by one of my texters this evening. Queensland Home Warranty Insurance Scheme is as old as the authority, and it's been in place since the 1970s. So,
correct. Yeah. And we had that in Victoria and New South Wales, but it got changed in 2002 because people wanted to make money out of the industry.
Okay. Bob, you're on the line. Evening, Bob.
Good evening, Phil.
Hi.
And my welcome to Phil Dwyer. I've known him for years and years and years. Look, let me just give you two examples from different ends of the industry. First of all, private certification.
Hmm.
The builder or the developer chooses his own private certifier. So, in essence, he's employing the private certifier.
See, I think a lot of people listening to that would think, what?
total conflict of interest.
Total conflict of interest. Yeah.
Now, what the private certifier does is collect certificates from all the trades issued by the tradesmen who carry out the work. Now, are they going to say, no, I didn't install the waterproofing in accordance with the relevant code? Of course they're not.
Are you saying that's all a certifier does?
Yeah.
What, so the certifier doesn't, you know, poke...
He doesn't go on site and make inspections.
Doesn't poke about and say, well, hang on, this tiling here doesn't come up to the flashing, so therefore you've got to redo it.
That's right. Some of the problems that we've got there is that the building surveyor is correct, as the caller has said, collects a series of documents. However, there's certain things that can't be viewed. Like we've met the two examples that we've been using today of electrical cabling. Most of that is installed behind walls and invisible.
Yeah.
Waterproof membrane is down and the tiles look great when they're there, when the building is just complete, so tiles don't come up to have a look at. So there's a series of the only thing that a surveyor can look at are things like building heights, clearance heights, door widths, exit signs, exit doors, extinguishers, the basic requirements. However, the actual building structure itself is not really inspected.
I find that incredible. Yeah, go on, Bob.
And then at the other end of the scale, we contracted to waterproof a very prominent public building in Canberra several years ago. The consultant who drew up the waterproofing details was the most highly regarded firm of professional consultants in Australia, and I'm sure everyone will know, but I won't mention their name.
Well, let's not mention names tonight. Yeah, but go on.
And they got all the waterproofing details wrong, and we had to redraw them. Submit the redrawn details, which they then incorporated into their drawings and reissued them over their name. That just shows the lack of depth in knowledge of details in the sort of areas where experts should be, unimpeachable.
Okay, all right, Bob, thank you, appreciate it. Joan wants to say something about building standards in WA too. Hi, Joan.
Hi. I've got three items. One is about about the 1970s, they changed from with the tiles, instead of nailing down and tying down, they nail about every fifth tile. So you get a blow, and up go...
You're talking about roof tiles here, are you, Joe?
Roof tiles, yeah. Mm-hmm. All the tiles are lifted like a pack of cards, and so the SEC and everybody are out there putting tarps in the middle of the night. And it doesn't have to take much of a blow, but some of the places where there's a gully, the winds, especially the July gales, come down there. We've got another problem with... I feel it's a problem. It's a company that advertises to do courses, building courses by correspondence, but there's no proof that the person who's doing the course is actually the person who's going to... And they advertise that they guarantee a job at the end, and they are a building company. And some of the people that are coming in are 457 from China, etc., and they don't speak English. So that can create a bit of a problem. And the other thing is that they are allowing, like on swamplands and stuff like that, or where there's clay soils, just to dump the yellow sand, and there's no time for it even to settle. And so you have subsidence cracks that sometimes you can put your hand through. And, you know, people are paying for a lifetime for these substandard hands, you know.
Mm.
So it's a terrible worry. And, first home buyers wouldn't even be aware of any of those sort of things, you know.
No, exactly right. All right, Joan, my guest, Phil Dwyer, President of the Builders Collective of Australia, and Sir Hilbert Sin, who's the National General Manager of Roscon. They're a company that specialises in identifying building defects. I don't know if you're as alarmed as I am about the general picture they're painting across Australia of really very little recourse for consumers if things go wrong and the degree of dodgy building that's going on. Victoria in particular is probably the worst spot in Australia for, isn't it, Phil?
Let's just talk New South Wales and Victoria being the most populated states.
Right.
In New South Wales, the University of New South Wales under a federal government grant, did a survey between 2002 and 2012 and found that 85% of apartments built in New South Wales, mainly in the Sydney metropolitan area, had defects. 85%. Now, that would be a similar number here in Victoria, where it mightn't be quite as high, but it'd be close to it. So it doesn't matter what jurisdiction we're in. There's not just a handful of problems.
Mm.
That it's generally across the board. And look, when you've only got 15-odd% of apartments built correctly, something's very, very wrong.
Something's very wrong, yeah.
Yes, and that is what's taking place in Victoria and New South Wales at the moment. And again, if we had a housing minister and we had one person that was going to look after our industry and understand it and know it, instead of abrogating their responsibilities to rent seekers, we'd be far better off. Because we do have, I think it was Joan from Western Australia talked about correspondence courses. We've had courses, become a builder in 6 weeks, pay $1,500 and you're a builder and get a licence. Now, that's been going on for quite some time because these training organisations get grants from the federal government and the state government and so on. They're only interested in numbers going through.
Mm. Actually, Jimmy's on the line. There's a point you wanted to make in Queensland, is it, Jimmy?
That's right. How you going, Phil?
G'day, yeah.
In Queensland, you don't have to be a builder. You just start a building company and you get a nominee supervisor and you're on your way. You don't even have to be a builder, have any knowledge or anything. And all you do is exactly what the gentleman there, collect the forms, put them in and there you go. I am a builder, have been building 45 years, I just gave up.
Yeah.
The Queensland government is absolutely useless. They don't police anything at all. You know, it just doesn't happen.
Yeah, okay. It's an extremely worrying set of circumstances. I would have thought, Phil Dwyer, from the Builders Collective of Australia is my guest, with Sahil Basin, the National General Manager of Roscon, a company that specialises in identifying building defects. Were things different once, Phil or Sahil? Do you see work that was built before a certain date of better quality than current work?
No doubt about that, Philip. The situation was, say, 15, 20 years ago, before privatisation became the key word in 97, that's when the building surveyors were given the go-ahead and so on and privatised. But from that point on, prior to that, we had builders that really cared about what they did. Right. They encouraged their children to go follow them into the business. And like I did, because I've been building for 45 years,
right.
Two sons, apprenticed. We worked together magnificently for 25 years. Both those sons have removed themselves out of the building industry completely because it's a rat bag industry. And they're not prepared to carry the responsibilities of consumer protection for domestic builders.
Mm.
So both are out now. We've got the lowest count of apprentices in the country that we've ever had. And the reason is because we're not doing it correctly. And do you think our trade associations will stand up and be counted and understand where the problems are? No, they prefer just the income stream to keep coming in, and she'll be right.
Mm.
It's not right. We're doing the wrong thing by the Australian public. The building industry is a very big industry, and yet we're treating it like a third world country.
My texter says these new medium-density apartment complexes being built at an alarming rate in Sydney along the rail corridor are the ghettos of the future. There's absolutely no way these buildings are structurally sound. Is it just a problem of new apartments? You're saying it's a problem that's bigger than that.
No, it's bigger than that. There's problems in the domestic area.
Mm.
There's problems in the high-rise. There's problems in these rail corridor areas, like in Victoria. We're building up to four levels of, we go to four levels because there's no warranty insurance, and that's the reason. So everything's four levels. Apartments are going up everywhere. And, yes, the size of the apartments, because developers are wanting to make more and more money, you cannot fit a king-size bed into bedrooms. That's impossible.
Right.
So, we're reducing the size of them and we're turning them into dog boxes and so on, yet still getting the same money for them as what we were a number of years ago when they were a third bigger.
Mm. Yep, okay, all right, Martin, you've been waiting on there a bit. Hello, Martin.
G'day, how are you?
I'm well, thank you.
Good. Yeah, you may have seen the current affair last week.
No, I didn't, but go on.
Okay, probably your viewers have, though.
Hmm.
I was on that show. My name is Martin, and they came out to my place and looked at my house and interviewed me, and we had a long session on their Better Builder. And the article also went into problems with fair trading. And
What's wrong with your place, Martin?
My place, we had lots and lots of defects. I had leaking balconies, walls not straight, doors in the wrong place.
When was it built? When was it built?
We started in 2004, beginning of 2014 we started.
Okay.
We're still building now. I was actually putting some pipes in, and just my sister told me that this is on the radio now, so I've come in to have a listen.
But, sure,
So I'm an owner builder. I've had to take over the work myself. Can't get a builder to do it. Either they say I don't want to do that. It's too much risk, or it's going to cost a bomb. Or they say, look, I can start doing this for you, but I've got to let you know now. This could if I find things wrong with your house, I have to fix it because I can't have bad things on my insurance. And that's what made me decide to do the owner builder's license.
Yeah, but in other words, you're saying your encounter with getting builders to fix things, wasn't that productive?
Yeah, no, it's not because it was their fault, because most of the builders I had tried to get to fix it later were quite sensible and reasonable people. But my builder I had first was so bad that he left so much carnage in my house. The carnage to quantify it, my claim on the homeowner's warranty insurance was more than $600,000.
Yeah.
The contract was only $550,000. And I got paid the maximum. With the maximum amount you can get paid is $340,000 from the insurance. And I got that. But it doesn't enable me to go out and get a builder to fix my house. It helps, but
it's not a solution. Yeah, okay, all right. Thanks, Martin. I appreciate your time. Phil and Sahil, how could it be better? What's a better way to do this? Because what you're describing sounds like a nightmare. What's a better way to do it?
I just wanted to add one point in there in terms of license trades. We've talked a lot about different states, and one of the main things that we see is that in Sydney, trades need to be licensed. In Melbourne, the only licensed trades are plumbers and electricians. Previously to coming on tonight, I had a look at the registration for concreters. There's less than 50 registered concreters in Victoria. Now, this is a serious problem when we're looking at high-rise construction, whether it be plastering, painting, concreting. The builders are contracting. They are using visas, which are the 457 visas, which were cancelled yesterday. I heard from Turnbull that we'll be bringing in under another regime.
They're rebadging the system, yeah.
Correct, yeah. So, however, unlicensed trades that we see is a huge problem. Back to the building surveyors that we were talking about before that Phil touched on, that problem in November 2014 of the La Crosse building, there was 170 buildings after that were audited by the Victorian Building Authority that are on their register on their website. And that register was up to date 17th February 2016. And that list was handed to the Municipal Building Surveyor of Melbourne City Council, and nothing has been done with it at all. So there was a big hype that the government and legislators would take immediate action on it. The Victorian Building Authority has produced a list to say these are the other 170 buildings within the municipality that have got that, and mostly high-rises and car parks, and nothing has been done on it at all. And one of the reasons is that the private building surveyors that you mentioned before, when they were all municipal building surveyors in councils, there used to be 40, 50, 60 of them. Now there's one municipal building surveyor for each council, and they are very, very overworked. But what is happening in Victoria, to answer your question, that the government is trying to do to rectify that, is they've started a new thing which is commencing next week called the Domestic Building Disputes Resolutions Victoria, commencing on the 26th of April 2017. So what that will essentially, that forms another red tape solution where the consumer, it's designed as a consumer protection tool where the consumer will have to go to the Disputes and Resolutions Victoria to obtain a clearance certificate from them. That it's called a certificate of conciliation that the builder and consumer did meet. However, there was no resolution, and then they can only go to tribunal. So now this is going to add another layer and another layer of cost to the actual proceeding
sure.
itself.
Sure. Phil, your comments, I mean, how could it be made better? I mean, is getting rid of this the current certification issue, a great starting point?
Yeah, look, I think certainly trades in Victoria need to be registered, but that's not the answer because New South Wales, where they are registered, still has the same amount of problems that Victoria has.
Mm-hmm.
We need government to sit up and take notice, strengthen the regulatory regime, and do something about the problems that the industry has. And what I mean by that is that the builders that do the wrong thing and create all this angst for consumers and so on, they need to be taken to task in a timely manner, not 4 or 5 years later.
Yeah.
And do something about it, and do something about the rat bag element coming into the industry through these various training organisations. So there's a number of measures that can be done, but first of all, government needs to stop sitting on their hands and look at the problem properly and deal with it in conjunction with the industry, and I don't mean trade associations. We have two trade associations for the building industry that compete against one another, but both of them want the status quo to remain.
Yeah.
So they should be out of it, and government should wake up to the fact that we're in crisis.
Mm. My texter says, building surveyors... Just a second, Sir Hill. My texter says, building surveyors were pushed into private certification by competition policy, first in Victoria, last of all in WA, and it was linked with the performance-based National Building Code. Plumbing inspectors and town planners remain in the sanctum of local councils, though all governments love to promote cutting red tape, and the electorate believes them. Yes, some good thoughts there too. My texter, Joe, says, Phil, two Western Australian examples. Country shire building inspectors generally do inspect houses at two stages during construct. In Perth, inspectors worried about a court after a court case where an inspector missed a problem, missed an inspection, all stay in the office and just rely on certification from builders. And that's what you two were saying earlier. Secondly, I was employed as a town planner to rectify a situation at a government authority where part of a house had collapsed and someone was hurt. After a few months, I made myself redundant by advising that they get a building inspector from a good council. You'd actually inspect buildings twice during construction. Conclusion, collecting certification from builders is no substitute for traditional building inspections. Thank you, Joe. And I think, I suppose, Phil and Sahil, you would say amen to that.
Correct.
Mm.
Yeah, correct. Yeah, New South Wales has done a good thing recently where it's introduced from the 1st of July, developers and builders in New South Wales will have to set aside 2% of the construction costs of the project as a bond for building defects.
Yeah.
Now, that commences on the 1st of July. That's no answer to actually fixing building defects itself, but it puts builders, it's one step closer to putting builders on notice that these things are getting very, very serious.
Mm. Yep, okay. We've got time for, I think, one last call. Skippy, hello.
Oh, hello. Sensational show. Look, very, very knowledgeable gentlemen you have there, a gentleman on the panel there.
Yep.
Just quickly, in terms of surveyors, I've recently engaged in through the VBA as a owner builder.
Yep.
And a few years ago, I built a little garage as an owner builder project, and at the time, the inspector was a gentleman through the council, and he got up in the roof with a fine tube comb and looked at the plans and got his tape measure out and critiqued the build. Okay, so I had to make a small little modification in terms of building some brackets and dyna bolting them back onto the wall because the surveyor thought that there could have been a draft of upwind of lift and could potentially push the flat roof up into the air.
Mm-hmm.
My current build that I'm doing, I've added on 68 square metres of a tiled roof and engaged in my friend who's a registered builder. However, I'm taking on my project as an owner builder. We put in the struts in the roof, went overloaded on the PAS load nails, and the private surveyor I engaged in didn't even physically get up in the roof to have a look if the roof was actually secured by nails. My friend who's a builder, couldn't believe how shocked I was, and I could not believe that the surveyor did not get a ladder and crawl up the roof and even have a look physically if we nailed it. And I said to myself, how can he actually tick off and certify the works without even getting up and looking?
Yeah, without even getting up and having a look at the place. All right, Skippy, yes, I think that would underline the issues that we've been talking about tonight. Phil Dwyer, President of the Builders Collective of Australia, and Sahil Basin, National General Manager of Roscon, a company that specialises in identifying building defects, have been our guests tonight. Phil and Sahil, thanks to you. I think you're pretty fairly and squarely laid down the gauntlet that substantial reform is needed in this area. I do thank you for your time.
Thank you.
Thank you.
You've been listening to a Nightlife podcast. For more great conversations about the issues that impact you, as well as features on travel and food, head to the Nightlife webpage. You'll find it at abc.net.au/nightlife. You don't need to be a night owl to enjoy the nightlife.